Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of HB Critical. I am Jarell, and I am joined by Gabe.
Hello.
And Christy.
Hi, everybody.
And Brandon.
Yo, what's up?
Not much, you know, just hanging out. How's everybody? How you doing? What you playing?
Man, all's good. Mostly Rebirth. I would say that's probably the majority of my game time, aside from my Paper Mario streams and whatnot. But yeah, that's me.
I think I've been trying to catch going through my Pixel Remaster backlog. So I'm skipping FF4 and going straight into Final Fantasy V because I never played 5 before. And I'm also somewhere in between the midst of all this chaos trying to find time for Rebirth.
Oh.
And I'm playing Dragon Dogmas 2 and Unicorn Overlord.
How are you liking Unicorn Overlord?
I obviously I bought the game without even finishing the demo, but I'm happy to see that the combat is a little bit more. I'm not gonna say difficult. The combat is more thought provoking than I originally thought. Because like when I first played the demo, it's like, oh my gosh, everything happens automatically. But no, you gotta. Like, there's a specific, you know, enemy type that if you have your characters lined up, we'll go ahead and attack both of them. So you got to move them around. It is really cool. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's very
much like not having to individually choose a, you know,
mashing
A
button
to just do an attack.
For anyone who doesn't know, it's a gambit system, kind of like in Final Fantasy XII. And what he's referring to is, like, you have two conditions that you can set up based on each attack. So, like, for example, you can set a condition that is, your axe wielder can AoE hit, right? So you can put a condition for him to hit the row that has the most amount of people. That way you're doing the most damage. Stuff like that. It's very interesting. I am playing Persona 3 Reload. I played it again for like an hour. That counts. Princess Peach Showtime, I turned it on, so that counts. I didn't play it yet, but I turned it on, so that counts. No one can tell me otherwise. Brandon's like, no.
Press X to doubt.
Final Fantasy Rebirth, because best game of all time. Dragon's Dogma 2, which I restarted 3 times because I didn't like the way that my... You know how you make a character and then you'd like look at the cutscene and it's like... It's just not hitting the same way it did in the character creator. That was me.
That happened to me fairly recently. I can't remember which game it was. Like, my character looked so cool, and then cutscene started. I was like, it was Street Fighter 6. My character looked great. And then a cutscene happened. I was like,
no, I know. I had some nice, juicy, plump lips. But I was like, why I look like... Like, why does it look like that in the cutscene? Like, what happened? But yeah, Dragon's Dogma 2, I have, like I mentioned, I restarted 3 times, so I finally got past the beginning, because I have to keep restarting. And for anyone who doesn't know, you don't get, like, an extra save option in Dragon's Dogma 2. Like, you have to continue on with the save that you have, like, and it auto-saves. So, there, like, you can't just see your character and restart. So I had to go through the process of, like, you have to... First of all, if you have on sync, for anyone who doesn't know how to do it, if you have on
is this similar to the Pokemon save data stuff where you have to do all these multiple steps?
Yes. Yes. You have to turn off your save sync to... Yes? Sorry, Gabe, am I wrong?
Well, no, you're not wrong. I'm just saying, for everyone that's been annoyed by the way you have to create a new character, the next update will be giving you the option to create a new character in the main thing.
And you can also just, nice. To be fair, you can also just buy the ability to change the way you look. But I was in the beginning of the game, so I was like, fuck it. I'm gonna just redo it. But yeah, it's a whole process. You have to go in, you have to turn off your auto-sync, you have to delete the actual save file from your system to make it read as a new game, because there's no, like, new game option as of now. But that's okay, because I actually like that. I think, yeah, don't let me start over, because if it were up to me, I would just never... Every decision I don't like, I would just reload, and this game is like, no, bitch, play the fucking game. And I'm like, oh, I'm scared. But it's great. It's going to be wonderful. It's going to be awesome. So let's talk about some news stuff. So since we were talking about Dragon's Dogma 2, I think we all have lovely opinion. Thank you. I think we all have an interesting opinion on the microtransaction situation that's been happening regarding Dragon's Dogma 2. So let's talk about it a little bit. I've got some articles here I'm going to pull up really quickly. This one is from WindowsCentral.com, and it is not loading, so We might have to pull one up from somewhere else. Ah, there it is. And this is by Brendan Laurie. Jak and Sockman 2 launches to mostly negative review bombing after microtransactions reveal, and man, what a bummer. This article has been updated because since this article, Capcom has responded to the situation with a new blog post in which they reiterated that they will leave the items as they are. Most of the items available for purchase are also available in the game, which we're going to go into. And they also mentioned that they don't plan on removing any of the microtransactions, even though the game is being review bombed for it. So I'll go ahead and read a little bit of this as of how the article was originally written. No, I won't. I'll just summarize it, because that's more fun and quicker. So the quick summary of the game, for anyone who doesn't know, is that it came out, a lot of reviewers put out their review for Dragon's Dogma 2. In the review, it was not included that you could purchase different DLC items. These items include things such as the ability to fast travel, the ability to buy keys to unlock yourself out of jail if you get locked in a jail. Very, you know, easy, simple things that you can do, all of which you can do in the game. However, there is optional DLC that you can purchase to do those things. A lot of people came out and they were very upset because the reviews did not include this. However, some of the reviews were not, the reviewers were not privy to this information before the reviews came out. So what ended up happening was a lot of people saw this and got very upset because they assumed that you couldn't fast travel without buying the DLC, or you couldn't make a new character without buying DLC, or you couldn't get out of jail without buying DLC, etc., and so on and so forth. And so what they decided to do was review bomb the game because of this situation. Then they found out, oh wait, we actually can do these things in the game, and most reviewers suggest that you do them in the game and do not purchase the DLC, because the DLC makes the experience less fun, basically. They do mention it is a better experience if you play yourself. And as mentioned, Capcom came out. They said they understand. However, they don't plan on changing anything. This is the way it was intended to go. So they're going to continue to have things this way. And that is the a summarized version of the debacle of the Dragon's Dogma 2 DLC situation. So, they don't have... So there was another article that said that Dragon's Dogma 2 still doesn't have fast travel, as its director says you only need it because your game is boring. This is a conversation that we had a while ago. I don't know if you guys remember. We talked about it. We talked about how he mentioned that most people don't have fast travel. I mean, he doesn't want to put fast travel in because most people have it because their games are boring. And we had a whole discussion on that on episode like 138, I believe, or something like that. So you should definitely go back and listen to that. I'll link the episode just in case I am incorrect. But an example of some of the things that you could purchase as DLC include the Wake Stone, which restores the dead to life. Points to spend beyond the Rift. You can buy Rift crystals, a bunch of stuff for like 99 cents, $1.99, $2.99, etc. And like I mentioned, the escape key for 99 cents, a character editor for $2, and so on and so forth. Once again, all of these things, as mentioned, can be earned in-game. You do not have to purchase them. They posted a message on the Steam page that said they were investigating and addressing crashes and bug fixes. They were looking to add ability to restart the game. They clarified that items can be obtained in-game or as paid DLC, and they were looking to perform. They were looking to increase performance. So we've talked about this quite a bit in our own Slack. I'd like to throw the floor to you guys. How are y'all feeling about the way that Capcom is handling the DLC for Dragon's Dogma 2?
So it low-key sounds more like the players were more mad at the reviewers for not including the DLC part than they were at the actual game. So that's the case. Why are you going to review bomb a game because you didn't read a review thoroughly? Thoroughly, whatever the word is. Hold on. Sorry, I broke something. What is this thing doing? To quickly touch on the point of saying people or developers have fast travel in their game because it's boring. One of the things I liked more about Tears of the Kingdom than Breath of the Wild was that there was more to do in the open world of Tears of the Kingdom. To me, Breath of the Wild did suffer from having a boring open world at times, especially because the only things you had to do. What? Yeah, I said it. I'm talking bad about my game.
Wow.
I'm talking bad about my game.
Holy That's moly! Crazy.
It's game of the year every single year.
A lot of times, Breath of the Wild it did seem very repetitive. Again, that's what I liked about Tears of the Kingdom more. Tears of the Kingdom seemed like a more filled up world. And of course, there's a whole thing of, you know, in Breath of the Wild, everyone was dead. In Tears of the Kingdom, everyone's coming back from being dead. But I do understand, you know, sometimes developers putting fast travel into their games. For another example, and this one's not even about it being boring. This one's just Skyrim has such replayability that on your 30th playthrough, you don't want to keep walking everywhere. You've already done it by that point. You know the map. You know exactly where you want to go. So I kind of agree, kind of don't agree with that saying. But when it comes to the DLCs itself and everything else, no one's telling you to buy the stupid DLC. This isn't Dragon's Dogma isn't, you know, like Overwatch where you need to get a character quicker than everyone else to do better in the game. It's, I guess it's for people who want to pick up a game that you have to pour hours into and you want to beat it in a day. I guess that could be the justification for that, but I don't know. I feel, me personally, feel like everyone's got their knickers in a twist over something that literally is not being forced upon you. That's me.
I'm not going next.
I will go next. So, my thoughts on this story have been, I would describe as rapidly evolving the more information I have been getting and the more I have considered things on this particular matter.
Can
now,
I
obviously.
Say something really quick, Brandon?
Oh, yeah, go for it.
I would like to preface whatever you're about to say with the fact that we all know Brandon is rich. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Anyways. So my initial thing when I heard about the I'm gonna ignore you guys. I'm talking.
Sorry,
That's an inside joke. I apologize for anyone listening. That is an inside joke. Go ahead.
For the clarification, thank you. All right. Anyway, I heard about, of course, about the initial thing about the microtransactions, and then of course the first thing I saw was that list. And so initially I thought, I was like, damn, this sucks. This really sucks. Then of course I've learned since then that it is, you know, more nuanced than that. And then it's actually just stuff you can just get in the game and it's just there. It's actually, from what I've been hearing, out of the way for people to get. Like, it's not in your face, go get this, go get this, go get this. It's just like a little menu you have to like find. And it does sound like a lot of people just jumped to conclusions when they saw that DLC list. So thinking about, and I've even seen someone saying that, hey, here's the, what is it, $2 for that get out of jail key. And then someone's literally said on Twitter, there's like, oh, you can literally just whack barrels in that jail and you get that key. So for some things, it's literally within 5 minutes of it being playable. Some is like an hour. So there's really no benefit to it. So then I started thinking, well, like was said before, maybe it's just for those who just really want to finish this game fast. Maybe that's why it's there. But the more I've been thinking about it, I've been thinking about like literally both sides of this thing. Okay, it's there. You don't really need it, but maybe it's for you want to do it fast. But then I also think about it's just easily available in most situations. I just don't really understand who this is for. And when I think about it from that perspective, I don't even know if it was worth it to have these options. And the only reason I say that, is because having this option to spend money to get these things that you can easily get in game seems to be doing more harm than good for Capcom in this situation. Because otherwise, from both people who are, you know, influencers who are playing the game and reviewers and just the general public, this is by and large seem like a strong game of the year contender for a lot of people. The first game that I've heard that's like actually rivaling Final Fantasy VII Rebirth this year for the game of the year competition. And now it's being marred by this talk of this microtransactions that are just ultimately unnecessary. And I just wonder if it was ever worth it. Like, is the convenience for this like 2% of people or another percent that is just not paying close enough attention to the matter, is that worth it to get this bad press that's, you know, I just don't even think it's necessary. And I just wonder, you know, ultimately Capcom made the message about them saying that, like, you know, clarifying things but then ultimately saying they're not going to take it down. I just don't get it. I'm more confused. Like, after all this thinking about everything, I would definitely like to hear other people's opinions on this, but I just kind of don't see the point. I think it's just doing more harm than good. Yes.
But like, the money.
Yeah, it's the money too, but like, also, like, what's the point of getting a digital edition of a game and then having to pay full price for a DLC?
Because people are
I'm kidding. That's another inside joke. But like, for example, that was funny. I'm patting myself in the back. But like, for example, like, to answer your question about like who that would be for, like, for us at least, and I'm not Jarrell, I'm not throwing you under the bus for this.
Oh,
but,
like, great.
Take it for someone. For someone with Jarrell's type of schedule, where Jarrell is very busy like 90% of the day, you know, it sucks that he has to pay like $5 to kind of catch up to what everyone else has been doing in Dragon's Dogma. But that's I think that's who they were kind of geared towards, and also maybe speedrunners. But
I have to ask a question since you just said that. You say that might be something for speedrunners, but would the time it takes them to make the transaction be factored into the timing?
No, they would buy it beforehand.
Speedrunning starts when the game software starts.
Yeah, they would.
So they would do all their transactions before the game even starts. And
that would be a benchmark for one of the speedrunners.
So what would that be called for speedrunners? Pay percent run.
Complete the game with paid transactions.
To be fair, the package was presented on Steam. It was literally like you could buy the game and then you could also just buy all the DLC at one time. So it was like you could just make a really big one-time purchase to get everything all at once. However, that made the game like over $100 and people were not very happy seeing that. And it's also because, you know, it's not just because it wasn't included for reviewers. It was because of the way that Capcom packaged it. They made it look like all of this DLC was not available in the game when the game first launched on Steam. So what you got was, here's the regular edition, here's the edition if you want fast travel and to be able to change your character and to be able to get out of jail. That is what was presented, which is why Capcom made that announcement saying that they've, you know, updated the Steam page to make it very visible to the fact that you can also do these things in game. So a lot of people just didn't understand that because it wasn't, the information wasn't presented to them properly.
Sure, that's fair.
Christy?
As it's rapidly evolving, I think, I honestly, besides the money, I don't understand why Capcom would still, I guess, move forward with the DLC, just because it seems like just with a negative press and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. No, go ahead.
I have had an issue with Sega's practices. I've had an issue with Capcom's practices. I've talked shit about Capcom before because they charge an exorbitant amount of money for nothing. Especially if you're looking at stuff like Street Fighter 6 DLC, which I've talked about on this podcast, that is just a fucking...
I'm still
like,
so mad about those turtle costumes, bro.
Resident Evil DLC, Street Fighter DLC, anything Capcom does is always them trying their best to take all of your money unnecessarily. And I just think that Dragon's Dogma 2 is another example of that. And I think the biggest disservice that they've done the game is the way that they presented this DLC, because I do know people that are specifically saying, I'm not going to buy this game because I don't like the DLC practices. And I'm over here like, don't do yourself that disservice because this game is great. However, I understand if you don't want to buy it because you don't want to support that type of thing. Like, I can't tell you no. Obviously, it's your money. Do whatever you want. If you want to buy the DLC, it's there. You don't have to buy it. I get that. And I agree with that. I completely agree with the fact that it's optional, and I don't think people should be as upset because it is optional, so I completely get where Gabe is coming from. At the same time, personally, it sucks because developers did such a great job with this game, and then you have publishers that are ruining the experience. I think it is not okay for game developers to penny pinch in a way that Capcom has done with Dragon's Dogma 2, especially because, like you mentioned, Brandon, like, what is the point? Like, what is the point of offering stuff that's already in the game aside from trying to get more money? Like, 100%, yeah. Like, if anyone can explain to me what the reason is, I will listen. But to me, there's only one reason that you add DLC for things that are already accessible in a game. Because you want to make money off of lazy people who don't want to do it, or people who don't have time who don't want to do it. Right? Like, there, I can't think of any other reason why this game, and that's another reason. Like, the developers made a complete package. It was ready to go. It was perfect as is. Everyone will tell you, do not buy the DLC because you'll have a better experience by not purchasing it. So if that's the case, and the developers made a great game that doesn't need DLC, and then you have publishers who push out DLC, who want to make more money, there's no other reason than you just trying to penny pinch your consumers. Like, that's it. Because if you can do it in the game, what's the point of offering it? And that's the only problem I have with this, right? Like, I do think if it's there, if people want to buy it, totally okay. Do what you want with your money. I think microtransactions a lot of the times bring up bad press. And it sucks because it brought up a lot of bad press and a lot of negative reviews for a game that 100% does not deserve it. Dragon's Dogma 2 is great. And if you're listening to this podcast and haven't tried it, please do. If you have the extra cash and you want to try a game that's, like Brandon mentioned, it is 100% in Game of the Year talks, as it should be. Like, it deserves it. It looks kind of ugly, but it deserves it. I think everyone should give it a try. That's what I will say. I will say, do not let negative reviews of this game sway you away from it. Don't let DLC sway you away from it, because it is a very good game and it does deserve every accolade, every bit of praise that it's getting. And I think it's such a shame that the publishers have pushed out DLC that made people really upset by it. And I think everyone who is upset has a very valid reason to be upset, because it is 100% just penny pinching consumers out of no other reason than to try and take money. Like, that's just that. Now, that was a long one. So let's move on. I'm sorry. Are you guys good? Anybody want to add anything else to that one? Or are we?
I've said my piece on it.
We're good.
Okie dokie. I think Gabe hates me, but that's okay. We're allowed to disagree. Wow. So, in other not great news, the Kotaku editor in chief has recently resigned. Do you guys know why? So there was a little bit of personal news that Jen Glennon, who is the former CEO of Kotaku, shared, and that was that she was removing herself from the company. The reason is that Kotaku has a new editorial edict that they were trying to put into place, and this edict asks that its freelance writers write 50 guides per week. 50.
And so, may I have some clarification before you continue?
Yes, of course.
So is that 50 per person?
Yes, 50 per person per week. Yes.
Great, continue.
So I'll read you guys a little bit of this article from aftermath.site that says Kotaku EIC resigns over new editorial edict. Jen Glennon, who took over as editor-in-chief of Kotaku in October, resigned Thursday. In a resignation letter seen by Aftermath, Glennon says that she made this choice due to the management team's recent decisions to deprioritize news in favor of guides. Glennon is the second editor-in-chief of Kotaku since Stephen Totilo's departure in 2021, following Patricia Hernandez, who was fired in August of 2023. After careful consideration, this is her quote, after careful consideration, I've concluded that the current management structure and decision-making processes at Geo Media are not aligned with my values and goals for Kotaku. This is a quote that she wrote in her letter of resignation. I firmly believe that the decision to invert Kotaku's editorial strategy to deprioritize news in favor of guides is fundamentally misguided given the current infrastructure of the site. This decision directly contradicts by months of traffic data and shows an astonishing disregard for the livelihoods of the remaining writers and editors who work here. According to a source close to the situation, Kotaku staff will be expected to create 50 guides a week at the site. Currently, Kotaku's homepage features a prominent Games and Tips guide module at the top of the page, in a space that was previously reserved for major stories and breaking news. Staff members have criticized the homepage redesign on social media, noting that Kotaku's major source of traffic is not guides. So that's pretty much what that is. Quick breakdown. As the article mentions, I don't know if you guys have recently been to Kotaku or, you know, visit Kotaku that often, but they're very much known for their news and their editorial features, right? Like, they're, like, you do not go to Kotaku looking for guides. Like, no one is like, let me search how to do this at Kotaku, because that's not what they do. However, when
even
you have...
Even then, Kotaku is not on my top list. List.
Exactly.
Like, I have a list of, like, places I would go for guides, and, like, Kotaku is not even there. Up there.
Exactly.
It's not on there. Like, zero.
And that's the frustration. So Geomedia, which owns Kotaku, is attempting to jump on the SEO bandwagon of guides and catching people's attention. The problem is, like Christy just said, we don't go to Kotaku for guides. And even if you try to get people to produce 50 guides a week, no physical person can do that, like, first of all, because guiding a game means you gotta play the game. You have to have hours to play the game, and then once you play the game, you have to have hours to write the guides to play of the game that you played. And the only way that anyone can do anything like that is sadly with the help of AI, and that just sounds like a lot of really badly written guides or half-assed guides or plagiarized guides, because you've got a deadline for 50 a week and you don't have time to do it, so now you got to go to IGN and copy someone else's guide because you're gonna get fired if you don't. And it's gonna create a work environment that is just not something I don't think anyone would want to work in, like, period, because I will not work for y'all, because people should have a life, as they do. I don't even have enough time to play a game now. Like, what do you want me to write about? A guide on what?
It's
beach?
Not sustainable.
It's not. It's not at all sustainable. And that's why, that's why she left. And it's a clear path of Kotaku going down the bin, because if your metadata for the week is showing that you're about news and features and breakout news, and that's what's making you, that's the identity of your site, for the people above who don't know this to just make these types of decisions, it shows the ignorance of, you know, these game companies, or sorry, these companies that own games journalism sites. Like, y'all really don't know what the fuck is going on, and you're making really dumb decisions based on data that you can't even fucking read. Anyway, that's my piece on this. What do you guys think the future of games journalism would be if things continue to go this way? And what do you think about 50 articles a week? And not just articles, but guides. And finally, how do you feel about the way Jen Glennon left? Basically, we have seen a lot of CEOs that wouldn't do something like this. So the editor-in-chief has stepped down because she doesn't believe in the way the site's going. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so touching on what you said, it's obviously the decision, the edict to do 50 guides a week is made by people who are ridiculously out of touch with everything, basically. Mm-hmm. The only thing that they seem to really understand is that guides do generate a good amount of SEO, because people constantly go back to guides. Mm-hmm. So that much is true. But as both you, Jarrell, and Chrissy have stated, Kotaku is not the destination for guides. However, maybe, and who knows if this is the actual thinking or whatever, perhaps the people on top are thinking, well, maybe we could change that. Maybe we could be the guys people. But let me tell you, if that is your goal, this is not the way to do it. This is not the way to do it. Going from rapidly, you know, enforcing a quota that is just frankly unrealistic. We've all written guides. They ain't easy. They don't require as much creative writing, but that does require you to get a lot of information, accurate information, presented in a very digestible way that people can easily absorb and use in their own gameplay. That's not easy to do. And in some situations, depending on the guide content that you're providing, it can be really difficult. Like, for example, maybe you're doing something like how to get this particular trophy in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Well, depending on that trophy, that could be real easy. Maybe she's like, oh, make sure you're talking to this one NPC. That's simple. But what if you're doing an NPC and like, well, I just did the Junon March thing in Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. What if it's a guide on like, here's all the where all the troopers are in Junon. how to pick the best formation to make sure you're getting the best score. What's the right timing? You have to not only get all that, gather all that information, but then you have to do it yourself. And then you have to make sure people understand how that's done. So that can, that's a day. It can't, well, maybe half a day for that. But that's my point. Half a day for one guide. All right, 49 and more to go. You can do it, right? No. 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 No, 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 no.
What if it's no the Final Fantasy X, the Chocobo one, to get Tidus weapon? The zero.
Ah,
zero?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. How to get Calibogue and make and get it to its full power. Oh, boy. Final Fantasy X alone has some ridiculously tough guides. To avoid going too into Ouija, that's just my point. That some guides are just very difficult to produce and to ask 50, you're asking, Jerome, like you said it best, you're asking for either very low quality guides, AI guides, or plagiarized guides. That's the only way that quote of it works. It's just not feasible. If you're going to really try to do a nice initiative to make guides more guides for Kotaku and make it more of a guide destination, you got to start off a little small on that. That's something you grab. I don't think you should ever do 50 a week, to be clear. But you can maybe start from a smaller number and just kind of like raise it up and see if you can see what happens, right? That's not what's happening here. So it's a terrible edict to force on people. And I am, you know, I'm completely in step with the editor-in-chief to realizing that that's, you know, that's terrible. And making the decision to leave Kotaku if that's what's going to be forced upon their staff. And just, it's not, just not right. And, you know, again, as you guys have also said, yeah, Kotaku is known for his editorials. You know, that's his focus. And if you're forcing 50 guides a week on people, that's going to vanish. So your main livelihood is just for that site as it exists now. It's just going to go down the tube to chase a trend that you will not be able to hit. You just won't. Like, I pity the person that can actually make this. And then, like, you can maybe do 1 week where you can get 50 guides out. But doing it consistently, like, it's inhumane. I would go as far to say there's just nothing good about this decision. And yeah, it's going to do, speaking of doing more harm than good, this is definitely going to do more harm than good to Kotaku. That's for damn sure.
I don't even know how you would get someone else to like take the editor in chief job. Cause I'm not taking that shit. Everybody's going to fucking hate me. Like, I'm not doing
exactly
that.
Exactly. Like, like, why would you take this job?
There's no reason. Because,
like, I guess you can take it just to say, oh, you were editor-in-chief, but at the same time, it's like, you hate it so much.
I'd take the job and just to put it on my resume and then quit the next week. Like, sorry, y'all, I can't do this. But oh, no, yeah, I was totally just editor-in-chief at Kotaku.
Oh,
please,
God.
Hire me elsewhere. I promise.
As bad as it is to have to be an individual writer writing 50 guides a week, can you imagine what it's like for the editor-in-chief
who has to edit all of those?
All through those guys.
Impossible.
In that week?
Impossible. That's impossible.
Three writers meeting that quota means you're editing 150 guides a week. Cool.
It's impossible.
Have fun.
It's impossible. Yeah. You know, that's my job. Like, I currently edit, like, articles a day. And I can do, on a good day, like, 12 to 15 at most. And that's on a very good day. On average, it's less than that. So 50 in a day, and then not only that, but those that are, like we've already mentioned, probably going to be a little bit of AI, a little bit of plagiarism, and a lot of bullshit. That's a lot of articles that are just not going to get out. It's not going to work at all.
No.
Gabe, what about you?
I think the way she left was very cool. I think it's like, you know, like, fuck it, I'm not even gonna spend my time arguing with you anymore. It's just, you want to do this, I'm out of here, good luck filling this spot, and when you do, good luck to that person.
I mean, she probably then argued beforehand with them,
yeah, which is why she, at this point, she's like, fuck it. And then the other thing, I don't know if it's just a me personal thing, but like, there's not even like 20 things I'd look for a guide for when playing a game.
Exactly.
Like, there's only so much. Like, at some point, you're gonna get several weeks where it's gonna be like, oh, remember in Animal Crossing, you can log in at this time to get turnips. It's like, bro, Animal Crossing is 4 years old at this point. We know when to get our turnips.
Yes, exactly.
People are gonna start turning into like older games. This is like, here's how to get
best prize turnips in Animal Crossing Wild World for the DS. And someone's just gonna go to Kotaku and be like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, like, and it's funny too because this situation feels like something that Kotaku would have one of their writers write about.
Yes.
Yeah, like, this is exactly what I would imagine them writing about. But
here we are.
Life comes. Life goes in a circle. Apparently,
I can't wait for the two people that went back to the DS to look at Kotaku's article. I was like, they finally made an article for me.
As the site dies. Those are the only two people that are going to be
looking at it. How did it die? They made my Animal Crossing Wild World guide!
And you know what the worst part is? They're literally going to look at that guide and close it and go to some, like, you know those, like, really old game facts that have, like, where people draw out, like, the beginning of the game? Just close and go to those.
That's what I've been using for Pixel Remaster.
Exactly.
That's just what I've been using for Pixel Remaster.
Like, we're not going to Kotaku. We're going to go to those, because those people are real ones, okay? They didn't get paid. They did that shit for free. Passion, okay?
That's true. Man, that's true.
And then they go back and edit it.
Yes!
New literally. Oh, yeah. By the way, here's new info. Oh, man.
Yeah.
No, Christy's right. Like, I have seen some of those old-ass game fact guides that were edited by either that same person or someone new when a remake or remaster of said game came out. They will go back and fix old information or whatever, update it for, like, it's crazy.
It's so good.
Again, like you said, no money in it. They just said, yeah, hey, this is new. Let me add this.
I wrote a guide one time.
I respect it.
And I don't like writing guides. I wrote a guide one time, and it was for Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. I don't know if I told you guys this. And it was for the questions for the class, like the class questions, like you have to answer the questions or whatever. And obviously I'm playing the game, so I'm like, all right, let me see what the answer is. And like, I got the answer right. I think one I got wrong, but it shows you what the right answer is, so I don't have to like redo it each time. So I was like, okay, thank God. And I accidentally typed in the wrong answer one time, and I didn't know. I know. I was like, wow, whatever. Like, this is good. Like, it's fine. And I got, it's the strangest thing, I got a message on Instagram, because my Instagram profile is there. I got a message on Instagram from someone, and he was so nice, and he was like, hey, so I've been following your guide, and I got this question wrong. I was like, what do you mean? Like, I did this. Nothing's wrong. It's fine. And he was like, no, you should check this out. And I looked, and I was like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. And he was really sweet about it, and so I fixed it. So thank you, person whose name I don't remember. If you're listening to this podcast, I will shout you out because you were fucking awesome. But I would be, after that, I've been very careful because I'm like, damn, like, you really have to think that people are actually following your stuff. Like, so when you're writing it, it's not in your head that someone's gonna, like, actually read it and, like, follow it. And so then I remember that, and I hear this, and I'm like, the pressure that I would have to try to write 50 correct guides, there's not a single person on earth who could handle that type of pressure from their job. And it has to come with some type of mental fatigue, because you can't even sit in front of a, like, you gotta sit in front of a screen to play a game for 50 hours just to write two guides, right? Like, if you imagine, like, I can't even imagine writing, like, people are writing guides for Dragon's Dogma 2 right now, and I'm just like, how the fuck? Like, how are you guys doing this? You're superheroes, because there's no fucking way I could do something like this. Ay, ay, ay. Anyway, are we good on this one?
Yeah, I've said my piece.
Okie dokie, let's get some more news out of here before we get out of here. So,
Rapid fire,
let's do it. Joshua Yale, who's been at IGN for 10 years, was recently laid off in a tweet where he announced, "To say I'm devastated after being laid off from my dream job at IGN after 10 years is an understatement. After a decade of pouring my heart and soul into my work, it's all over in a surprise company reorg. Our union is asking IGN to compromise on a fair and reasonable solution." I bring this up because we did talk about IGN having Ziff Media, the owner of IGN, having voluntarily acknowledged IGN's union. And yet, as of now, 3 staff members have been laid off and nothing has happened. So so much good that that union has done so far, and it's not their fault. It's 100% Ziff Media, so we'll see what happens and continue on with that. Animal Crossing is 4 years old, since we're talking about it. Animal Crossing New Horizons specifically is 4 years old, and it has not had an update, but we've talked about that before. Ubisoft has announced that they are going to be presenting their new research project, Neo NPCs. It is a new kind of NPC that uses generative AI to really talk to you. You can discover how their team of writers and developers are coming together in an exciting experiment that people are not very pleased about, to say the least, as of right now. And then we've also got... Oh, is that it? Am I done? No, I'm not. Okay.
No. There's something else.
I'm not. Baldur's Gate 3's bosses blast publishers' greed behind layoffs. We have two Baldur's Gate stories, actually. This is the first one. This is from Eurogamer.com. And I don't know who it's written by. Oh, this is written by Tom Phillips. The director of Baldur's Gate 3, Sven Vink, was one of many to speak out on the recent mass layoffs within the video games industry at an industry awards show last night, blaming the job losses on corporate greed that had been fucking this whole thing up for so long. That was his quote, not mine. Held as part of the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, the Independent Games Festival Awards and Game Developers Choice Awards were full of criticism for companies that had made workers redundant over the past 18 months during what was highly regarded and widely regarded as the worst period ever seen for job security in the video games industry. Quote, greed has been fucking this whole thing up for so long since I started, Vink said, while collecting the GDCA Best Narrative Award for Baldur's Gate 3. I've been fighting publishers my entire life, and I keep on seeing the same mistakes over and over and over. It's always the quarterly profits, he continued. The only thing that matters are the numbers. And then you fire everybody, and then next year you say, shit, I'm out of developers. And then you start hiring people again, and then you do the acquisitions, and then you put them in the same loop again, and it's just broken. You don't have to, Vink went on. You can make reserves. Just slow down a bit. Slow down on the greed. Be resilient. Take care of people. Don't lose the institutional knowledge that's been built up in the people you lose every single time, so you have to go through the same cycle over and over. It really pisses me off. Next up, from also Baldur's Gate 3, it was announced that Baldur's Gate 3 developer Larian Studios plans to move away from Dungeons & Dragons entirely and do something new. Founder Sven Vink, who we were just talking about, said at the Game Developers Conference that he is leaving the IP in Wizards of the Coast's hands. They will not be making any DLC, they will not be doing any expansions, and they will not be doing Baldur's Gate 4. And I believe I've got one more or two more, maybe?
I think there's one more on Baldur's Gate 3.
Yes, there is! Baldur's Gate 3 devs that began work on the DLC and then they nixed it because, quote, it wasn't really coming from the heart. Sven Vink said that the team was elated when he canceled the DLC Larian Studios had begun working on, adding that the studio will not be making any DLC expansions or sequels for the hit RPG. And I love this because all of it just ties into everything he's previously said. And we've got about 15 minutes. Anybody want to comment on any of those stories?
Yeah, I'll touch a little bit on the... Go ahead, Gabe.
The one thing that worried me about them talking about the not doing any more work on Baldur's Gate 3 is saying that they're leaving the rest of it up to Wizards of the Coast. In the past 2 years, Wizards of the Coast has been dropping a lot of poop.
Trash.
Yeah, so I'm a little worried about that, but besides that, I mean, good for them that they didn't try and force something out not wanting to.
Yeah. No, I'll add on to that a little bit. It's so funny that they were elated at the DLC cast.
I think that's great. They're like fuck this shit.
That is great.
That is so amusing that they were considering. And listen, from everything I've heard about Baldur's Gate 3, it sounds like it really doesn't even need DLC. They would have just done it just because it just seems to be the industry status quo these days for a single player game to just add DLC. But if you don't always need it, so they realized that and they just stopped. And it's just so refreshing because these past few weeks, we just talk about these decisions on video games that are clearly not made by the developers who are in the trenches making them out of their passion. It is being made by people on top who just want money, money, money.
Yep.
So for them to just make a decision that, hey, you know, we're happy with what we got.
why are we even doing this? We don't want to do this. We did it because we felt like we had to, but maybe we don't. And the truth is, they didn't. They really didn't. Baldur's Gate 3 is a complete game, and it even goes back to their statement that we talked about a few weeks ago on the podcast about how, you know, they really feel like they've made like a complete project, which is why it wasn't on Game Pass. We're like, no, mm-hmm. We've made a game. We're charging a fair price for it, for this complete package. No DLC, no patch, anything like that. That's the price of the game. So everything goes to them as saying that, like, you know, we made a project that we're proud of. It's complete. Here's the price for it. Pay it if you want, or if you don't want to, you don't have to, but that's what it costs. And we're done. But that's it. And they want to move on to something else. And Larian Studios, they produced a game that is Game of the Year winner. And I'm confident that whatever they decide to put out next will be of that same quality, because they have earned that goodwill. It's just a shame for the Baldur's Gate fans, because as Gabe pointed out, if it's going to Wizards of the Coast now, Baldur's Gate 4 may not be as good, or whatever they decide to call the next Baldur's Gate game, if they even decide to do that next. Maybe Wizards of the Coast also realizes that they probably won't be able to make as good a Baldur's Gate game. But at the same time, now Baldur's Gate has become synonymous with quality after this third game. So maybe they will just put out a game and hope that people don't look too deeply into the developer, and that they say, oh, Baldur's Gate 4, man, I love 3, we gotta get this game. And then they play it and they realize, ooh, hey, wow, something's wrong here, something doesn't smell quite right.
That is why Larian is being so loud about the fact that they are not doing this shit no more. Like, if the next one is trash, do not blame us, because we are not
they can be louder.
Yeah,
that's true. I agree they're loud, but they can be louder, especially if Baldur's Gate 4 gets announced. I want them to have like an air horn and be like, hey, we're not making this. And, you know, the PR thing was like, hey, we wish them the best, but it ain't us if it ain't. Just, you know.
I think one of my favorite things about all these stories is just that Sven Vink has been 100% down on everything he said. He literally said, y'all are the problem. Mm-hmm. And he's backed it up, right? Like, we're not making this DLC because we don't need to. Like, this isn't something that we want to do. We're not continuing down this road because, well, Larian Studios, we did something amazing and we're done with that. You cannot pay us enough to go back to do this. And not only that, big shout out to Larian Studios, because since the launch of Baldur's Gate 3, there have been so many patches that have added tons of updates, including new endings, like new character endings. Like, it's not like stuff that you might see in a DLC, like update, has been put into updates that are free for everyone playing Baldur's Gate 3. So the only thing I have to say about this is what happens when you don't have, you know, developers that are bought out by large publishers, because they have the ability to go in and do these things. They're not forced to make this DLC. They're not forced to charge you for updates. They're not forced to make a Baldur's Gate 4, right? Like, this is the beauty of the industry standard of having developers that are indie that can get a publisher and still do what they need to do without being forced to do things like this. And this is, it kind of saddens me when I think of, you know, the developers on, I'm coming full circle here, but it saddens me when I think of the developers on Dragon's Dogma 2 that did such amazing work so far. And, you know, people are shitting on them for DLC that, you know, the publishers are forcing. Like, it's not their fault. So, like, imagine if Dragon's Dogma 2 was, indie, and they didn't have this debacle, the conversation would be so different around this game. And, like, I wouldn't see YouTube videos trying to shoot it down, and we wouldn't have these reviews that are review bombing it. And, yeah, and it also just makes me think, like, we should really not have these big publishers buying up all these developers, because Baldur's Gate 3 is the perfect example of what happens when you let people do what they do best without forcing their hand. And you look at just look at Baldur's Gate 3 and then look at anything that Microsoft has put out in the last 2 years from their exclusive studio. Like, compare them and what do you get?
Specifically Redfall.
Exactly. Like, compare them and what do you get? I think aside from the smaller indie ones like Hi-Fi Rush and Pentiment, because they're not like, they're not forcing those, you know? But like, when you think of something like Redfall or Halo, or anything really, just look at what happens, right? Like, and you can look at, you know, Square Enix, look at something like Final Fantasy 16 and Final Fantasy 7 Rebirth. Like, you know, they have a really good connection with PlayStation, but they're not owned by them as a publisher. They can do whatever they need to do to get things right. You know, same thing with Elden Ring. The DLC is coming out. Everybody's excited for that. Like, you know, Final Fantasy 14, Dawn Trail. I'm talking about Square Enix, of course, but like, this is what happens when you let developers do what they're supposed to do. And the biggest takeaway for me also is what he said, which is that when you get rid of people that know how to do this job, they have the inside knowledge, and you're hiring new people, you're losing all of that. And that happens, like, no matter what job you're at. Like, even at my other job, it's just like, I see people come, they get hired, they get rid of the older people, and then the new people are like, how do you do this? And it's like, you literally let that knowledge go right out the window. You have no idea what's going to happen now. Nobody can do it, because the person that knew how to do it, that's been there for 10 fucking years, you've let them go. And that's the same thing with IGN. Company. Girl, same. My company too. They asked me, and I was like, I don't fucking know. The person who knew how to do it, you fucking fired him. Like, you should have asked him before you fired him. And they should have told you to ask no, because you fired him. Sure, I wouldn't have told you anyway. Sure. And you know, that's like, I think about Joshua Yale, that's his name, from IGN, who's been there for 10 years, right? Like, I don't know if you guys have seen any of his content. I recently started watching his content. He is the comic book and Pokemon guy at IGN. I watched his stuff.
So much knowledge gone.
I learned how to play the Pokemon TCG by watching his stuff. Like, I learned about comics by watching his stuff. He was the IGN person that I actually watched. So, who is that person now? Who fucking knows? I don't even want to learn how to play Pokemon from y'all no more. Bring Joseph back. Joshua back. Whatever his name is. I watched him, I promise.
I don't really know his name.
It's Joshua Yale. He was also a really nice LGBT representation at IGN. Okay? I liked him. And now he's gone. And, like, nothing has happened. And so this is literally what the head of Larian was talking about. Like, all that knowledge just completely gone. This guy's been producing videos for them and working there for 10 years. Like, the amount of knowledge that you just let out the window because of reorganization from company greed. Once again, it's all fucking full circle. It's all full circle. It's all the shit that he was just talking about. Everything that's happening now, it's just, it's, everything is connected. This is a conspiracy. I'm done.
Conspiracy is called capitalism.
It's a conspiracy capitalism. Called capitalism. Exactly.
Honestly, this podcast has kind of come full circle, just because this particular episode, I mean, has come full circle, because we started off with two longer stories about people who are trying to do the right thing but being said no by their corporate overlords, and then we end with the Baldur's Gate story, and this is like, yeah, we're gonna make DLC, but we said nah.
Yes,
we're happy with what we got. We're happy with the product. It's great. And they could just say no. Got to say no, and people are not upset about it.
Yeah, like, no one's like, oh, no, Baldur's Gate 4. No, like, they fucking deserve it. They made a beautiful product. They deserve to do whatever they want.
From everything I've heard about Baldur's Gate 3, you could just do another playthrough and get a wealth of new content just doing that.
I've mentioned this before. But yes. Like,
which is why we're waiting, Brandon, because we're all going to start a party when you get the game.
All four of us can play, literally, together as a party.
Hey, podcast viewers, that sounds like a future project you might see from us at some point.
I would love that, okay? I've only been able to
put a little.
We have been having some behind the scenes discussions again?
Yes, actually.
Yes, be that. Yes, do that. Do that.
You literally can.
Yes, we have been having behind the scenes discussions about, you know, games we can play together for future. So, you know, we might just throw Baldur's Gate to end up this too, you know.
Yes. So if you guys don't hear us on a week, it's probably because you're going to come back to us playing a video game together as friends. Because we really are friends. For real.
We really are friends. I promise I like these people.
All right, I think we're good to go. This is a great one. Thank you, Christy, Gabe, and Brandon. It's been wonderful. And thank you, listeners, as always, for watching and listening. And we'll see you guys next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Okay.